must be some kind of way out of here. Say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 2017 start of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's great to have you here with us. You can get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter, at Golf News Net. You can download our mobile apps, which are available for Apple and Android devices. And as of earlier in this week, you can actually download the Golf News Net channel on Roku to your Roku device. And head over to your Roku device, just look up Golf News Net, and you can download it. We're in a little bit of a beta stage, but we're going to start running with that in the coming weeks and do some really cool stuff that's different than what you hear from us on the radio side and what's different than what you see from us on the website day to day. So really, really excited about that. And for those of you who do not have a Roku device, but maybe you have an Apple TV, we have an Apple TV app coming for you very soon. We'll let you know more about that as we develop it and get it out there into the iTunes store. We are presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's odds each and every week for our PGA Tour, our LPGA Tour, our European Tour, our Web.com Tour odds posts, and we use them to influence our fantasy picks because we get a great look at where the money is moving in real time, and we also get a sense of how the odds change based on where the money moves. So head over to BetDSI.com and check them out right now. Whether you can bet legally or not, it's great information to have each and every week when you're playing fantasy golf. No guests on the show. I kind of want to lay out a little bit of an agenda for the year, and then we'll get into some of the results of the last couple weeks. Obviously, we haven't really had a podcast to start the year, so we've missed out on discussing Justin Thomas's dominance. When we're recording this is Inauguration Day. Donald Trump is probably the best golfer ever to have taken the oath of office, at least when he takes the oath of office, at noontime today. So we kind of merit a discussion there about what that could mean for the next 4 years. And I don't mean that for growth of the sport, but we'll get into that. So as it relates to GNN, I kind of outlined, it's going to be a huge year for us. Last year was huge. The year before that was huge. And this year should be huge as well. And huge for a different reason. In the first couple of years of the site, and we've been around about 30 months, and we've doubled our audience each whole year. And we've done that, and actually more than doubled it last year, but basically on average doubled our audience every year. And we're hoping for the same thing this year, and frankly for 2018. But that's for the website. We've been able to grow our audience through radio and podcasts, and we've got this show, obviously. We've got Jay's Plays. If you've never listened to Jay Flemish's show, it is extraordinary. The names that he gets from the world of golf architecture, golf reporting. I mean, if you love golf courses, if you love golf architecture, you should be listening to Jay's show, Jay's Plays. It's available on iTunes. We've got a new golf travel podcast available every day that hopefully you've seen on the website if you're over at golfnewsnet.com. It's called Talking Golf Getaways. Darren Bunch and Mitch Lawrence have joined forces with us. They ran Golf Getaways, which is a tremendous publication centered around golf travel and golf destinations. And they came to me toward the tail end of last year and said, hey, we'd really be interested in joining forces with you and starting to produce golf travel content, golf destination content under the GNN banner as Golf Getaways. And it was irresistible. The guys are great. They put in hard work. They are very well prepared. They do a great show. And we're going to have a lot to come in terms of golf travel content in the year to come. And if you saw the number of places that Darren and Mitch play, have played, have already scheduled to play for this year, you'd be extremely jealous and you'll want to hear from them each and every time. They have great rapport and a great discussion, usually 5 times a week. So that's available as well. And then we've got another new show from Sean Crew and David Kamens, who's formerly of Golf Channel fame. Sean's up in the Pacific Northwest, already does great stuff for ESPN Radio, has a golf show out there as well. It's called Hashtag Golf. It is a fast-paced weekly show, about 30 to 45 minutes depending on the week. Where they'll have the guests, they'll go through a bunch of different topics. The first show was excellent. Had Billy Horschel, the former FedEx Cup winner, on the program. He was a great guest. And so check that out as well. We'll get that on iTunes in the coming weeks so you can subscribe to that too. So that's kind of the mantra for GNN Radio, expanding original programming. We'll do some more live stuff like we did last year for the major championships, and we'll get into that. Then on the video side, we're going to do a video channel where we actually will not just do a commentary in front of a camera like you see on so much golf video. We won't give you disinformation. We won't be boring just standing in front of a camera telling you stuff. We're going to do all kinds of great stuff. We will tell you about the shows that we're doing. We'll get you engaged in conversation that we're having. But we're going to also lead the conversation in the sport by delivering in a truly visually stunning format the story of our sport and the stories that matter in our game. And we'll do that in a tape format. We'll do that sometimes documentary style. We'll do that sometimes short form, sometimes long form, sometimes live, mostly taped. But we will be bringing you the world of golf through a lens that I don't think can be matched. And we're going to do it in a way that is technologically aggressive and that isn't really being done in our sport right now. And we want to be out in front. We always wanted to be a leader in technology and trying new things. And even if they aren't great out the gate, they usually get to great. And that's what we strive for, to work with it, work with the technology, and work with what you want. And so that's what we're doing. So very excited about that. So those are kind of the things GNN set to do this year. We'd love to hear your feedback on those things as you experience them or as you don't want to experience them, but we would love to hear from you. As for the show for this year, what I have intended to do for the last couple of years is kind of get away from me just being engaged in a 25 to 30 minute monologue on one, two, three topics in the sport of golf. When I started this show in 2002, I started it with the idea of having great guests and them leading the way, them leading the conversation, in part to make up for the fact that I was not an expert, the fact that I didn't really have the kind of pool, kind of sway, you know, to be considered a golf expert, golf insider. And I'm not saying I'm a golf insider now. I'm just not on tour often enough to tell you that. But we kind of got away from that. We kind of got to the point with the 19th Hole Golf Show in the mid-2000s to late 2000s where the show was mostly guests. It wasn't really me. I would do like one segment and then the rest would be one, two, or three guests. And it worked out well. But over time, kind of gotten away from that and recording guests. And now guests are kind of a rare thing for the show. And it's usually me 25 to 30 minutes. Again, just kind of spitballing. So I want to get away from that and kind of get back toward a happy medium this year. And I say this ironically as I don't have a guest for this show. But I wanted to lay this all out for you for the year. And I want to have people on the program who aren't necessarily famous people. I would love to have the biggest names in our sport, especially in the professional, and be a part of this show every once in a while. I'm partially jealous of No Laying Up and the guys over there who are doing a great job doing what they do and getting tour players to create relationships, even friendships with them. I mean, think about Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. Those guys legitimately know the No Laying Up guys. They legitimately know Chris Solomon, who's a good dude. And so I don't want to quite go to that end, but I want to have those big names every now and then. But I also want to have conversations with people who are extremely interesting in our sport that you might not have otherwise heard of and you might not otherwise hear from in golf media because they are either not sexy or because they are not boisterous or for whatever reason. So we're going to seek those people out this year. And so we'll try to have a balance each week. We'll try to have a guest and we'll try to have one or two segments that without commercials. I mean, it's just topics where we're just talking to each other, and then we'll bring in other people into the conversation and talk to them, and then we'll kind of put it all together, and hopefully it all come out as something really well-rounded and something that you can walk away with every week feeling like you knew what happened in the world of golf, but you also know what other people don't know is happening in the world of golf. So hopefully we can do what we aspire to do. We're not always successful at everything. Nobody is. But that's what we're hoping for. So, as always, I always want to hear from people I always want to hear from you, what you're thinking, what you're enjoying, what you're not enjoying. People you want to hear from, people you are interested in golf that maybe aren't getting a fair shake or deserve more conversation than they're getting. And let us know about that. Ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, Ryan Balanchine on Twitter. Golf News Net is on all of the platforms at Golf News Net. Just to be fair, for this year we're going to put an emphasis on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, we're on Snapchat, but I don't snap much. We're on Instagram, but I think I have like 140 posts in 5 years. So that's kind of like Haley's Comet when I post on Instagram. It's just not, just doesn't happen very often. Maybe we'll get to more of that in the year to come. All right, so that's 10 minutes of intro on the year. Now let's talk about what's already happened this year. And what's already happened this year is incredible. We have in Justin Thomas, a guy who has pulled the Hawaii double. He's the only guy other than Ernie Els to have done it. Ernie did it in 2003. And he went super deep at Kapalua, 31 under. And then the next week carried it over to Honolulu and Wailea and won the Sony Open. It was a little bit different for Justin Thomas because he was 22 under at Kapalua in a very good tournament, a great battle on the final day with Hideki Matsuyama. A couple self-inflicted wounds brought Matsuyama back in. Matsuyama also played great for the better part of that round on Sunday and got himself back into it. And then a 3-jack on 17 against a birdie from Justin Thomas put the whole thing away. And Thomas had won for the second time in the season. He had successfully defended the CIMB Classic title in 2016 that he had won in 2015 over at TPC Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And now he had, from that point, 3 PGA Tour wins. Then he goes and smashes beats the 36-hole record, and he ties the 54-hole record, and he sets the 72-hole PGA Tour scoring record, something that stood also the same number of years as Ernie Els, being the only guy to win the Hawaii double. Tommy Armour III previously had the PGA Tour scoring record for 72 holes, 254, at La Cantera in the Texas Open, back when it used to be played in like the fall series, and it was in San Antonio, and not really an enjoyable tournament. Now it is, and now it's really increased in profile with Valero being a part of it. But so Justin Thomas has done some incredible things to start the year. And going into the year, we thought, oh, Hideki had a tremendous finish to the year, won 4 of 5, he was second in the other. And then he adds in that second place, so he's been a winner or first loser in his last 6 worldwide events. And then he kind of stumbles off a little bit at YLA, and that was bound to happen. But now you have Justin Thomas, who's now the story, 8th in the world. He could very quickly get into the top 5 into the world because a lot of those guys are a little bit susceptible. Even the world number 1, Jason Day, is susceptible. Had Rory McIlroy played this week, were not for his rib injury, he, had he won, would have been in a position to take over number 1 in the world. So where Jason Day finished the year in terms of average points in the official world golf ranking was one of the lowest figures in like a decade. And you kind of got to go back to like, all right, Tiger used to be number 1, and he used to have like 14 average points, and now it's like 10.7. So we've got a not weak number 1. I mean, we just have statistically a lot of guys bunched together, and since they're all doing fairly well, you don't have one guy who's just scooping up points by the second, hoarding them, and getting a very high average points ranking. So that's good news for players who are in the top 20 who can go on a run. Certainly players who are in the top 10 can go on a run, get in that top 5. Obviously, that doesn't really mean anything at the end of the day. It only means something if you're number 1 in the world because that doesn't change all that often. And it means something to be in the top 50 in the world because it gets you into pretty much every major championship. And you have to do it either the week before the major or at the year end. But it helps to be in the top 50 in the world. It gets you into pretty much everything that you want to play, including a lot of free paydays. Justin Thomas is beyond that now, being a top 50 player in the world. He is a top 10 player in the world. And he is realizing his potential. And the fascinating thing to me is that I guess there was kind of this sentiment that, you know, when's Justin Thomas going to win more? When's he going to do more? Because people saw what Jordan Spieth did in 2015, won 5 times, won 2 majors, and a FedEx Cup, And then you kind of go, okay, well, if he can do it, then any guy who's barely into their early 20s can do it. And a guy with Justin Thomas's pedigree, he was a college player of the year, was a stud at Alabama. There's a lot expected of guys who win that award, the Nicholas Award. And there's kind of this thought, okay, well, now you got to produce now. Well, he did. He's got 4 wins. And he's in pretty elite company for players with wins before 25. He's in that company with McElroy, with Phil Mickelson, with Jordan Spieth, and the guy at the top of all that is Tiger Woods. His winning rate and the number of wins he had before the age of 25, if you ever go and look at it, and we've done pieces on this, kind of when players peak in terms of age, nobody has won more before 25 than Tiger Woods. I think he had something like 22, 23 PGA Tour wins before turning 25. That's astounding. It's ridiculous. If you think about his 96 and 97, he won 2 out of the gate, won a Masters early in 97. And then you have to add in the fact he gave up 1998. He basically gave up 98 to make his swing change with Butch. Then comes out in 99, murders the tour, 2000 murders the tour, and goes on this run that we've never otherwise seen in golf in terms of dominance in that short of a period of time. At least I don't feel that we've seen comparably. And so I'm not saying Justin Thomas is heading for that category. I'm not saying he's going to rip off another 20 wins and become Tiger Woods before he turns 25, because from this stage, he would have to win another 20 times, which means 10 more this year and 10 next year. That's not happening. But Justin Thomas has the kind of game that he can be dominant on the PGA Tour, and he just had to figure out how to close out in different ways. And he kind of backed into that first win at CIMB in 2015. Adam Scott kind of handed him the tournament a little bit, but that no matter, you won. And then to win CIMB, again, successfully defend a title, that is hard to do, although it seems to happen a lot at the CIMB Classic for one weird reason or another. And he did that a little bit differently, had to stare down Hideki, had a pretty decent field chasing him the entire way. Lahiri was part of the conversation, and just kind of had to hang on to get the win, and he did that. And then got into another battle with Hideki, which I think was good for him, at Kapalua, and then went the complete opposite route for the first time as a professional at YLA, just blew everyone away, which in and of itself, I mean, no one has ever blown a 7-shot lead going into the final round of the PGA Tour. Ever, 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 ever. 7 shots or more. That's it. You know, 6, fine. 7, no. And so you don't want to be that asterisk in history. You don't want to be like, I'm the guy that effed up the 7-shot lead. You don't want to be that guy. And so you start in the day and you're like, I just got to finish, right? I mean, that's all I got to do to win. But in the back of your mind, if you're Justin Thomas, you had to be thinking, hey, I started the week with 59. Each day, there's been a guy who's had a chance to shoot 59. Kistner had an opportunity at it. You had Zach Johnson thinking about it. You had Ches Reavie, thinking about it in the final day. And if you're Justin Thomas, you're like, that number is out there, but does that number come from a guy who's 7 or 8 back, or does it come from a guy who's like already 14 back and it doesn't really matter all that much? And he kind of got out of the gate a little bit slow. He made an important par save on the front 9. He knows the first 8 holes for him are kind of the hold-on on the front 9. At least for the pros, it's the back 9 for the membership of YLA. And then he plays the final 10 holes brilliantly. He gets a birdie at the last, and he sets the 72-hole scoring record. That's important. He had all of those things in the back of his mind. What he could, the asterisk he could have been, and the asterisk he wanted to be. And he avoided the one he didn't want, and he got the one he wanted. That's pretty awesome. That is hard to do. That's Tiger-esque. When you know what's in hand, or what's at hand, if you're successful, and you do it the way that you know you can do it, you can get a record. You can get something that's hard to beat. And that's what Justin Thomas did. So moving forward, okay, now what? Now we've got career builder this week. Phil Mickelson's back, shoots 68 in the opening round. We don't really know how that's all going to pan out, so we won't really get into that. We'll talk about that next week. But then the season really starts with the best players getting in for Torrey Pines. Then you have kind of a little split the next week where you have some guys staying here. You have some guys going to play in Dubai, get a little of that appearance fee, sweet, sweet money. And then start to come back and start thinking about good events like Pebble Beach. And you got Phoenix, and you got the LA Open, which is now the Genesis Open. And then you make the Florida swing, and all of a sudden we're in April, and it's Masters time, which is pretty awesome. I mean, it's really not that far away. But the question mark is, all right, Justin Thomas had a great October 2016, or October-November 2016, has had a great January 2017, didn't really have golf to play in December. Does it carry over? How long does it carry over? Because for most golfers, you don't have long stretches where you're great. You have short bursts where you're great, and then you're kind of, and then you're great again, and then blah, and blah. It kind of goes like that. But there are some players who are just consistently awesome, or they're a top 10 machine. Matt Kuchar used to be. What Dustin Johnson is now, has been for most of his career. He is a top 10 machine. Jason Day finishes in the top 10 a lot. To be that kind of caliber player, to be a top five player in the world consistently and not just kind of fluctuate when you're playing great, you need to be a top 10 machine. So I'm very interested to see how Justin Thomas acclimates to being now a four-time PGA Tour winner. All of a sudden you went from 1 to 4 and you're in different company. You're held to a different standard. You probably hold yourself to a different standard. And so I can't wait to see what he does with it, because I think he's going to take the ball, football pun intended, because he loves Alabama, Crimson Tide, and run with it. And he has the potential to be a number one player in the world. There is no doubt in my mind that he does. And if you made me compare the games of Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, I would take Justin Thomas right now. The only downside is he's not as good in the short game as Jordan Spieth is. And so for that reason, Spieth can kind of will himself to compete, will himself to wins, will himself to contention, even without his best stuff, until he can find it when he needs it. That's how he got around the Masters last year. That's how he nearly won the Masters last year. It wasn't with his best stuff. It was with the kind of stuff that infuriates a lot of his playing partners, because they just wonder how he is beating them on the round when he is playing the way that he is. And it's because he is probably the best grinder that's going to come of this generation. And that's not a knock. Grinder is not a knock. I mean that he stays in every shot. Even when he gets whiny, he still manages to perform when it matters. And he manages to grind out bad rounds and turn them with a mortal and pistol into good ones. And that capability is going to be very useful for his career if he can continue to improve his mechanics. If he doesn't, then he might get passed. But what he has done so far, and what he could improve to become, and he's, again, even 25, he could improve to become, is pretty substantial. But what Justin Thomas has in the bag right now, 350, 380, 400-yard drives, and the kind of game that is, it gets a little bit more accurate, and he gets a little bit more confident in his tournament management at this level, ooh, wow, that's going to be hard to beat. It's going to be pretty awesome to see. All right, if you're not into politics, I'm not going to engage you in politics for the final few minutes of the show. Donald Trump is going to be president of this country in about 90 minutes from when we're recording this. He's going to take the oath of office. He's going to parade 2 hours later toward the White House. And then they're going to have an inaugural ball. And then we're going to start up to 4, maybe 8 years of his administration. And golf's reaction is goody-goody, because he plays golf, because he owns or operates 17 golf facilities around the world, including some potential ethical challenges that could be created by the facilities he will run or does run in Dubai. Trump International Golf Club Dubai, designed by Gil Hanse, which is just opening, and then Trump World Golf Club in Dubai, and Domek Properties, which is kind of a pseudo-state-owned, everything is pseudo-state-owned in of substance in the United Arab Emirates, and certainly in Dubai. That's going to be a Tiger Woods design that opens sometime in 2018. And so kind of the initial reaction from golf was, great. This is great for us. This is great for our sport. We have a guy who loves our game. We have a guy who has sponsored or been a host of a PGA Tour event. He's going to be a big advocate for golf. And he's kind of said, oh, no, I'm not playing golf during the campaign, which was a lie, by the way. I've been told plenty of times he played plenty of golf during the campaign. Just didn't tell people he did. And he's played a little bit of golf since. And I'm sure he'll play some golf as he takes his vacation schedule or whatever it turns out to be, however he figures out how to run the office to his lifestyle, I guess, to the demands of the job, all of those things. But there was a little bit of profiteering, I believe, in the golf world, especially on the media side. And Golf Digest decided to come out with a special edition on Trump being the golfer in chief. And they created this special issue. I think it's on newsstands now. Saw some online advertising for it, a preview for it. It's $15, and it comes with a year subscription to Golf Digest. So basically, they're trying to get you to pay for the Trump issue, and you get a year of Golf Digest with it. And that means that they can increase their subscriber rates, and they can charge more for advertising, blah, blah, blah. It's a little bit of profiteering. It's a little bit of scam. It's not really a scam, but that's not the right word. But a little bit disingenuousness in selling in the magazine. They're really trying to get you to be a subscriber. And Golf Week did the same thing. They did an issue on Trump and what he can mean for golf, that he is the cover of the January 2017 issue. I'm here to tell you, Donald Trump, and we've done a podcast on why Donald Trump is not good for golf. Not that he's bad, but he's not good. And that's because Donald Trump believes golf should be an aspirational sport. It should be one for the rich. It should be one for the well-off, not for the average person, not for a $20 green fee, not for a 12-pack of natural lights hidden in your bag kind of people. And I don't agree with that. I don't think that's true. And I think if you look at golf, you would find that's not true. Based on the number of rounds played in this country, you would find that's not true. And so you also have this guy who's president. We have a guy who's leaving the White House today who played 300 plus rounds as president. I do not believe a single person took up golf because Barack Obama played 300 some odd rounds of golf as president. I think he's entitled to 4 or 5 hours of his week where he can do that. And I don't think anyone should have complained about it one bit, but I don't think he had an influence on the sport. Just for the same reason, I don't believe Donald Trump, who two of his courses will host major championships here this year. The U.S. Women's Open will be at Bedminster, New Jersey, which he's kind of used for his transition meetings with potential candidates for posts, as well his golf club in Northern Virginia, Trump National, D.C., but it's really in Northern Virginia, formerly Lowe's Island, where he broke some EPA rules, by the way, to cut down some trees and improve the view of the Potomac River. But that's going to host the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship. I don't think that will change how people view golf. I don't. And so that's plain and simple for me to say because the data is there. And so I guess my question is, why go all in on something you know the answer to? I don't know. I think you can kind of read between the lines. It's hoping to make a buck, hoping to make a quick buck. And people in this industry, we need it. We need money. We need support. It's just the way that it is. Now, fortunately, we're coming along at Golf NewsNet very nicely. We've gone from tight budgets to slightly less tight budgets versus some of the folks in the magazine part of the world have gone from big budgets to less budgets to tight budgets. And things are changing for them. So we'll probably meet somewhere in the middle. But I don't get the sense one way or the other, whether you like him or dislike him. And he's got about a 38.5% average approval rating going into his day one, which is historically low for the last half century of new presidents. But whether you like him, despise him, whatever it is, whether you voted for him or not, I do not believe he will have a substantial impact on golf. And I think for golf to proffer otherwise is a mistake and inaccurate and misleading. And I think that the people that have the most impact on whether people play golf or not are you and me. Golfers talking to other people. Like, hey, why don't you come out and play golf with me? Hey, I'd love to go to the range with you. Can I get you some clubs? I have some old clubs in my basement. Do you want some? I donate clubs all the time. That's what can bring golf. That's what can, quote, grow the game. Which, by the way, we talked about this before, but grow the game really means make other people money. It means make golf money. Doesn't mean some humanitarian cause to grow golf. It means make other people money. And not you money, because you don't own a golf business or a golf course or a golf facility. It means make other people money. That is the golf industry's job, to grow itself, to get more people to play the sport. But it's not your job. Your job, if you want, is to play golf and enjoy it. And if you want, to bring other people who may not enjoy the sport already and maybe bring it into their lives. But either way, you're a golfer, you love golf, you're doing enough for me. And for listening to this show, I am always grateful. And thank you for giving me 30 minutes of your time this week and each and every week going forward for the rest of the season. Next week, we'll try to have a great guest for you, depending on what happens at the Career Builder Challenge and also what happens otherwise in the world of golf. We've got plenty to discuss throughout the season. It's going to be a tremendous year of golf, and I really believe that. We are setting the stage for an incredible year in our sport, at least professionally, and we'll see about otherwise. But I can't wait to go on the ride with you. So shoot me a note, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, with thoughts and comments. Please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes if you listen to the show that way. It's quick and easy to do, and it helps us reach more people. Download our apps when you have a chance, including our new Roku app, and make sure to give us a follow if you haven't already on social media avenues of your choice at Golf News Net. Until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.